Bet on Bears fans. Wednesday edition of the Chicago Bears podcast. We're all in different spots on a holiday weekend. This is not Jason McKee. This is John Yurkovich, the good kid in the building.
My last day here, so it's best.
A little vacay coming your way?
Well, it's not vacay. I mean, I just took 2 days, Thursday and Friday.
Came back
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going anywhere, but you know, you've got vacation days. You got to use those vacation days. Otherwise, you lose them. Use them or lose them. I'm using them.
I'm not mad at it.
Friday, Monday, because it's the holiday, and then back to work Tuesday.
Wait, what you got planned?
Kick off the old 2024. I'm going to be in Whiting.
Yeah.
Whiting, Indiana, counting down the pierogi drop. Pierogi festival every single year in Whiting, Indiana.
Yeah.
And they commemorate the new year with the big pierogi drop. So I'll be there counting it down. ABC 7, Channel 7 will be there. They'll have a couple people there. And it'll be 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, boom, 2, 1. Happy New Year.
Yeah,
so it'll be a festive occasion. And I'll be working, obviously, here on New Year's Eve doing the Bears game. Then after that, back to Northwest Indiana. Probably go to get a little food, a little steak, something special.
Fill
up the bellies. Maybe stop at the casino, and then off to Whiting. Off to Whiting, Indiana for the pierogi drop.
No, hey, you got to love it.
Festive. Somebody's got to count it down.
Somebody's got to do it. We want to dive into your NFL knowledge tonight.
Oh, boy.
And we want to sit here and ask you about the ever-loving question that's flying through the NFL. Who is the NFL MVP?
Oh, wide open this year. Wide open this year. I don't even know if I care.
I love it.
I'll tell you why I don't really care who the NFL MVP is. I don't have a wager on it, so I don't really give a rat's ass.
There's no money involved, right?
Whether it'll be Brock Purdy, whether it's Lamar Jackson, whether it's Christian McCaffrey, whether it's Tyreek Hill, whether it's Dak Prescott, any of them, it doesn't make a difference to me. I think we approach this year's playoffs with it being more wide open than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And that kind of excites me, the fact that anything can happen in this year's playoffs and who's going to be the NFL, the Super Bowl champion, I think is the question that's legitimately out there. And I don't know if there's a clear-cut favorite right now.
This is kind of what the NFL wanted, right? For me, I feel like I look at a lot of these teams and I'm like, you guys are kind of just a bunch of mediocre teams, and then there's the two or three best. But this is what the NFL wanted. They wanted the parity. They want a bunch of teams.
Who are the two or three best?
I would say you're probably talking Ravens. I would say you're talking San Francisco. I know they just had the bad game, but I think overall their body of work's been pretty good. I would say Miami, and I think that's probably your three best in the NFL right now.
I think it's hard to keep
Dallas maybe, but on two games losing there.
I think it's hard to keep a level of excellence over the course of a 17, 18-week season.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you're going to have a lull. At some point, you can't maintain the intensity that you've had in the past, whether it's injury or whether it's fatigue. You know, Frisco just was on a six-game winning streak. At some point, you're going to end up losing a game. I never say like losing is good for you, but at some time getting kind of smacked upside the head
brings you back down,
especially going into the playoffs, helps you bring back down to earth. I think the game benefits San Francisco. Losing to Baltimore, believe it or not, I believe benefits San Francisco. Now you take a look at what you did, what mistakes you made, how they attacked you, how they went about the business of making things happen against you.
Yeah.
And then you get a chance to adjust if you do end up meeting them in the Super Bowl. Because when I looked at it at the beginning, I said at the beginning, like 6 weeks ago, I said San Francisco against Dallas is what I believe the NFC Championship game. And the AFC, I thought it was a little more wide open, but it's kind of narrowing down now. So it could be the Baltimore Ravens going up against the Miami Dolphins. Kansas City really looks like they backtracked. Buffalo could be that outlier of the team.
Buffalo, I throw in there too. They're getting hotter.
I mean, everybody wants to blame Matt Nagy, and I guess that's popular. At some point, you run out of talent, and when your number one guy is Kadarius Toney, and naturally over the course of the last five, six seasons, that the quarterback Mahomes has been here, he's had a young Travis Kelce. But now Travis Kelce's the only option. You know, Carmen said Juju Schuster-Smith or whatever his name, Smith-Schuster. Yeah, but he was a viable option. He caught the ball when it was thrown, though.
He could catch.
He can catch the ball.
Yeah.
When you've got guys that have tremendous talent that can't catch the ball, that becomes a problem. And it becomes a problem over the course of the year. you can hide it for a while, but then you see it on film, then you can't hide it no more.
Yeah.
And we're going to say, okay, we're going to cover Kelce, and we're going to make this guy beat us. And this guy can't beat you. So every team now goes, what are we going to do? We're going to shut down Kelce, and we're going to make that guy beat us.
Yeah.
And that guy can't beat us. So you can take away a weapon. You can take away a weapon. But taking away multiple weapons over the course of time, and running backs aren't weapons, they're just guys. You can take away a number of your wide receiver options away, and then your tight end gets old. And now your tight end gets old, and you take away your weapons, and now they know that the only guy that can beat you is the old tight end,
yeah,
who's getting beat up and beat up and beat up even more. Now who's going to step up and beat you? Now they got number four on that team is a pretty good player, but he's still a young player developing.
Sky Moore? Is that Sky Moore?
No, it's not Sky Moore. It's 15.
Sky Moore
begins with an R. Reynolds, Rice, Rare.
Oh, Rashi Rice.
Right. Rashi Rice.
Yeah.
So he's a young kid that looks like he might be something, but right now he's developing into being something. So, you know, you're trying to develop stuff with those individuals. You look at Green Bay and the development. Christian Watson was supposed to be the guy that developed. Dobbs was supposed to be the guy, but now they got the Jaden Reed kid. Is that his name, Jaden Reed,
or
I got 100%. The wrong guy?
No, Jaden Reed.
Yeah, Jaden Reed kid, who's surpassed both of them.
Yeah.
And has actually become their legitimate stud wide receiver there. So, you know, that's something to take a look at. Okay, we drafted this Watson kid, and this Watson kid hasn't really produced. He hasn't come in there. So you don't know who the guy from Kansas City is going to be to produce.
Right.
You're bringing him in. You're hoping somebody, you know, makes it happen. I think Darnell Mooney, if I'm Darnell Mooney, I go to my agent, give me to Kansas City now. 1 year. $3 million deal, proven contract with big bonuses for the amounts of catches and the amounts of yards.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, well, if we are successful in Kansas City, then we don't want to leave Kansas City. We want to stay in Kansas City. The options here in Chicago at quarterback for Justin Fields are DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, running back.
Right.
That's 1, 2, 3. Your second receiver is not option two in this, not in this offense, but to Justin Fields. So that's option number four. How many times you actually get to number four?
Not
if it's
often.
Not a broken play.
Yeah, not
if
often.
It's a broken play, you can find number four.
Yeah.
But that's the only way. When you're scrambling, when you're trying to get away, then you have a guy miss you, then you come back. Now number four becomes an option, or somebody who's open on the half of the field that I'm looking for. So I think Mooney's going to benefit by a change of address and a change of quarterback. But if I was him and his agent, I'd be going directly to Kansas City and saying, whatever contract you want to give me, just put some bonuses in there because I know I'm going to fire here. I know I'm going to be able to get the football, and I know I'll be able to do something. But being the second receiver here in Chicago, and let me tell you how this works now. You got Marvin Harrison Jr. in here.
Same thing.
Say he becomes number one.
Yeah.
And DJ becomes number two.
Yeah.
So who sacrifices?
It is the one thing that I've asked with this Bears team, right? That there is a limitation from Justin Fields. And it's not to say he can't move the ball down the field. He can't find his guy. But when he has his guy, that's his guy. That's the guy he's going to throw to. DJ Moore right now is the guy that's getting the football. And they took DJ when DJ Moore got hurt, right? He went to Cole Kmet. We still never saw Darnell Mooney get involved in that. To me, that is one of the limitations that your quarterback has, because his one and two are not his wide receivers.
Right.
Darnell Mooney had a great relationship with him, and now he's taking a little bit of a step back. My biggest concern, two biggest concerns with wide receiver. One, with Marvin Harrison, is he going to come in and he's going to have the same level of impact as DJ Moore, or is he going to have the same level of impact as Darnell Mooney?
Who's your number one? Who's your number two?
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
When Justin Fields is your quarterback, your number one guy is still going to be your number one guy.
Yeah.
But if that's Marvin Harrison, then what happens to DJ Moore's
That's
numbers?
The question.
I can tell you what's going to happen. They're going to look very Mooney-esque.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have an unhappy DJ Moore on the bench. An unhappy Darnell Mooney, nobody cares about.
Right.
But if you have an unhappy DJ Moore on the bench because he's number two wide receiver, and Harrison, and if Harrison comes here and he's not getting the football,
right,
you can bet your sweet ass that that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not going to be a happy camper
either. There's going to be some George Pickens, George Pickens-esque conversations.
It's not Peyton Manning with DJ Moore and Marvin Harrison Jr.
Right.
You know, when they had Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison Jr., that offense flew.
If Marvin Harrison,
Dallas Clark.
Yeah.
Everybody was getting their piece of the pie. Everybody's getting the football. So it's different here in Chicago. It's just the way it is. Justin Fields, your quarterback. It's different in Chicago. And the hierarchy of receivers are DJ Moore, tight end, running back, second wide receiver.
Yeah.
I'd like to be a fourth wide receiver on this team. Wow.
Tyler Scott?
Wow.
Valus Jones?
Anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody. Yeah. I mean, you're past an afterthought. So it is the way it is, though. This is what it is. That's how it's going to be with Justin Fields. Whether you like him or whether you don't like him, that's the offense. And that's the progression.
Interesting. Somebody broke down and talking about the two quarterbacks that we have here in Chicago. And they looked at Tyson Bagent and they said, when Tyson Bagent's under center, he allows his weapons to be the best athletes on the field. When Justin Fields is under center, Justin Fields is the best athlete on the field. And sometimes that takes away from it. Now, not to say Tyson Bagent is the end-all, be-all at the quarterback position. I don't believe that he is. But I do think that we see that where Justin has 1-2, me. And I think that that a lot of times...
That's not a bad thing.
Right. Because he is the best athlete on the field.
That's not the worst thing in the world.
Right.
But... as an offensive coordinator, you have to know what the limitations are,
yeah.
And then you have to work around those limitations. So you might have to take 60% of your playbook and throw it in the garbage and start designing stuff that's going to be that's going to try to make your quarterback and his tools and his assets that he has to be successful. But you got to, as an offensive coordinator, then be willing to take your ego and just throw it in the garbage and find something that's going to help your quarterback be a better football player.
I think that's the biggest change that Lamar Jackson had. It may happen here. It may not happen here. But Lamar had John Harbaugh, who literally went, oh, he's never going to be a pocket passer. And he recognized it immediately. Right. Didn't take any time. He's like, we need to change to what he does best.
Right.
We don't need him to change to what we want.
After game two, Justin Fields told you he wasn't a pocket passer. Remember, game of the year, he said, I don't like this.
He said, I'm getting too much information.
I don't like this. Well, too much information. He goes, I don't like it. I don't like standing there having to do what a quarterback has to do.
Yeah,
I don't like it. This is not what I do well. You put me in a position to be successful. He's basically pleading for them. Please don't drop me back in the pocket. Don't let me stay here. You know, you could always start somebody in the pocket and then move them.
Yeah.
You know, start them in the pocket. And then move them. The problem is when you limit an offense to half the football field, you truly are limiting yourself. Okay? Limit yourself to half the field. You are limiting yourself. You do not have a robust offense. Now, the only thing they can do is they can run the ball, and they've got an offensive line, I believe, and if they make improvements at the center, I think they've got an even better offensive line.
Yeah.
And, Whitehair and Patrick actually played halfway decent against Arizona. That's because 98 on the other side was garbage. He was garbage on the other side.
My God.
I mean, he was stuck at the line of scrimmage on a double. Lucas Patrick got called for a holding. The guy looked like he was loving it.
Yeah.
I'm Velcroed on. I throw a hand up, and the guy that hadn't thrown a flag all day felt like, well, they're not going to pay me if I don't throw a flag. So he threw one.
That was a clean play.
A mystery holding card. Yeah, You're talking about mysteries.
That was on the Justin Fields run to the left, I believe.
Yep. NFL officiating is at its very worst this year. It's just bad. And the part-time guys are always going to be part-time guys, just the way it is. I think they've put too much crap in their heads that we know it's a penalty, but don't call the penalty if this. I saw Joey Porter interfere with a wide receiver in the Pittsburgh game.
Yeah.
They interfere with him in the end zone. He's trying to make a great catch. He's got one hand on the ball, and he's being tackled by Joey Porter Jr. in the end zone. And they show the slow-mo from the camera that's above the quarterback, and you can see it. It's plain as day. He was interfered with the whole time.
Yeah.
The whole time he was being interfered with. Nothing. And you look at the official, and it's like, they're clueless. They've got no idea. And if they got headsets on, I wonder if they're getting the directions from up above, which is the worst. Get the headsets out of your ears. Get them out of your ears. I don't want to see anything in there. Any earpieces in there for me, no good.
Because it is at an. I agree with you. NFL officiating it's probably the worst of all sports.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's the worst of all sports.
It's terrible.
And there's so much protection for them after the fact. I think about the Justin Fields first Hail Mary that clearly wasn't an interception. Clearly,
right. They never turned it over.
The ball touches the ground completely.
Yeah.
After the game, because it was called as a the play was an interception. They allowed the play to stand. And I feel like that was the biggest issue when they had the – you got a challenge on pass interference and things like that. Guys were too proud to say I was wrong.
Well, the change of possession too.
Yeah.
Change of possession is automatically supposed to go under review because you – but because you went in at halftime, what'd you do? The guy have to go pee? The guy upstairs, did he have to go pee? Yeah. Did he have to go to the bathroom? Did he have to go get himself a hot dog? Did he have to get in line first at the little luncheon thing they have at halftime up there for him? What is it that he didn't do? Why didn't he do his job? Why didn't he come back and say, hey, that's an incomplete pass. That's not an interception. We adjust it, you know, as we go on. The kid will find out after the game that we ruled an incomplete pass.
So, what's it like trying to adjust to an inconsistent ref, like a referee that, like, starts the game calling something a little looser?
Well, that's hard.
And then in the second half, like, that's a flag.
That's tough on defensive backs, and it's tough on receivers. That's who it's the toughest on.
Yeah.
Offensive line and defensive line, we usually don't have to put up with any of that. There's holding on every play. It's just if they decide to call it. Theoretically, it's got to be at the point of attack. Can't be on the backside. It's got to be at the point of attack. And the play has to be going for positive yardage. If the, what they say is you're being held and the play is for no yards or negative 1 yards, there's no penalty.
Right.
They don't want you to call the penalty on that. So they've put so many caveats where even though it's the penalty, but we don't want you to call that penalty if it's for no yardage, even though it's at the point of attack and it's bad. They get graded down for that. So while you're seeing stuff, you see a holding call. Now you got to go back in your mind and you got to go, okay, what are my 27 caveats to not call this penalty? Boom, boom, boom. Does any of what I'm thinking about calling? That's why you see hesitancy. That's why you see two referees looking at each other going, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What kind of call should we make here? Because they know what the call should be, but now they got to go through all the stupid caveats they got in their brain that if this, then that, then only this and not that, when, you know, and it's crazy. It's the stupidity that they've created. And part of it is the officials and old officials that have come in here and they advise everybody. And then they say, oh, but if this, well, this would be a holding call, but this and that and that. And no, it either is a holding call or it's not a holding call.
Yeah.
That's why the refereeing in the NFL is horrific and it's bad and it's terrible.
It is.
And how do you wager on games? I would never, ever wager on an NFL game knowing that the officials have so much subjectivity in it. It's brutal. It's awful.
The NFL is at a point. I mean, like, it's the only league I've ever seen where because a call is bad, gambling sites will say, we'll give you your money back.
Well, they do it in soccer sometimes, too.
Do they?
Yeah, they'll do it in soccer sometimes. Now, soccer's got a direct thing to the thing, and they got VAR, and they got all types of craziness out there. They've got their own dilemmas and problems out in Europe for soccer, but they're, it's problematic out there, too.
Would you ever want to move away from going to the point where there's not the eye in the sky?
You got to have the officials on the field. I prefer my officials to be about 35.
Yeah.
40,
yeah, we got some spry old guys out here running.
Be physically fit. I mean, that'd be my preference.
Yeah.
But some guys in their 50s and 60s are in pretty good shape and could fly up and down the field. But you
Hockley
certainly.
Junior still
you,
out there?
You have, yeah.
With the yes, gun
yes,
show?
Yes, yes. You have to be able to get up and down the football field.
Yeah.
And if you can't get up and down the football field, you know, you got a limp, you got something, you can't be out there.
Yeah.
You know, because your inability to move, you know, vision things too. We all got contacts. We all got everything. But listen, you got to be able to see what the hell's going on also.
Yeah, so there's some of those guys out there with the glasses on. I'm like, I can see the prescription in the camera.
That's a
thick one.
We had good officials back in the day. They'd come talk to you. They'd be, you know, hey, listen, if you do it again, I'm going to have to call it. Don't do that. You know, they go to the offensive line and say, listen, you're starting to get outside. You get outside, I got to call it. So
Bears fans have had a lot of beef with officials when it comes to Justin Fields. They feel like he's not protected.
Well, he's not.
And that the referees are basically just looking at him and saying, you're a runner, you're supposed to get hit.
No, that's not what they're saying. They're saying, well, he didn't mean it. That's what they're trying to say. Well, he didn't mean it. He tried to lay off. He didn't really hit you, which doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
They used to breathe on Tom Brady. Somebody got a penalty.
Yeah.
Tom would be mad, and he'd look at the official, and the official would go, oh, sorry, Tom. Let me throw a flag in the air. Let me call something on these guys because you look upset. So Cam Newton was the first guy that was victimized by that. And it was terrible. It was terrible. The minute you give they're marking you back. When you give up your slide, it's not even when you hit the ground. It's like when you start thinking about sliding.
Yeah.
I mean, they're punishing people, and I hope they tells Justin Fields that. He almost didn't have a first down the other day.
Because they were mismarking him.
He was going toward the sideline. He slid before the sideline. He was a yard and a half on the other side. And the person on the sideline's moving. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? I mean, what the are you looking at? Come on. It's such a crock of shit. And like I said, I've seen so much bad officiating and so many horrific calls this year that there's no way I could put a dollar on anything in the NFL. Now, maybe touchdowns, individual touchdowns.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Somebody hit a 14-legger on that one, won $470,000. Maybe that, but even then, DeAndre Swift was almost in a couple of times, and he had Swift in his. Swift finally popped at the end of the game, but it looked like Swift was in, and they said his knee had touched the ground on a play where he was running and changed course, and so he didn't get one. So it almost looked like, geez, they didn't give that one to him. They went back, looked at it, and they didn't put him in. And the other one was Isaiah Pacheco. Pacheco looked like he was going to be in. They called a penalty a couple times, and then he finally got in at the end of the game. And the guy had a wager on Pacheco, too.
Oh, that's right. This just happened. Yeah, I just saw that. He had a
14-legger. He had a $5 big. Wager.
It was on Christmas Day, wasn't it?
On 14 legs. 14 legs of it, and he got it. And he went into the next day, too. Because wasn't Kansas City on Monday?
Kansas City was on Monday. Well, it was Christmas Day.
It was Christmas Day. So I think he double dipped. He had him on both days.
That's an interesting one. Let me ask you this.
There was a lot of points scored this weekend. This is one of them rare weeks where it looked like, of 16 games, I bet you 10 or 11 of them were overs.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of points. A
lot of overs this week.
A lot of
offense. So if you were looking to bet touchdowns, this was the week to bet touchdowns.
if you're Matt Eberflus, should he be doing something more to protect his quarterback? All we keep hearing is we're sending in the tape.
No, what are you going to do? You're going to cry?
I think you're going to
tip over the drink table and send all the drinks flying. What are you going to do? All you can do is legitimately complain.
Yeah.
And tell him you're doing it again. You're not protecting my guy.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you say they're not protecting my quarterback. My quarterback.
I feel like that's the part we're not getting.
He's getting in. So. Sending it into the officials is great, but bitching about it in public would help you a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like that's the part we're not getting. And Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes were 210% wrong to snap about Kadarius Toney being offsides. He was so offsides, it was egregious.
Yes.
It was ridiculous.
Yes.
But that was only the first time that a wide receiver had been called for that play. There had been 11 offensive offside calls, but I believe 9 of them were on tush push. One was on a tight end that was offsides lined up. That was the first one on a receiver. Since then, we've seen it called every week.
Oh, yeah. And listen.
Every week because the NFL doesn't want to look bad.
This is what the NFL is wonderful in, too. Points of emphasis.
Yeah.
The office and the memo out to all the officials, our point of emphasis this week, and they'll send out 6 videos of what they're exactly talking about.
Yeah.
When you see this, this is what we want flagged. The next week, you'll come in and you'll see a penalty hadn't been called all year. All of a sudden, gets called. And that's what the NFL does. We have point of emphasis. Point of emphasis. Coming into the year, we've got a point of emphasis. We've got a point of emphasis. Like when they changed the roughing penalty on the quarterback, all of a sudden, you looked at the quarterback wrong and it was a penalty. I saw a Chuck Cecil highlight film yesterday, a couple of days ago. It's communicating with some of the guys in the 91 Green Bay Packers team just before the holidays. And somebody put a YouTube video up of Chuck Cecil when he hit Dave Meggett and he hit Altoon and he hit the guys from Brett Don't Pay the Perryman with the Detroit Lions playing the league. They suspended that guy from, was it Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
That hit on
Vontaze Burfict.
Pittman. And not Vontaze Burfict, the safety.
Oh.
The safety from Pittsburgh on the hit on the Indianapolis Colts, Michael Pittman.
Yeah, they suspended him for
Michael Pittman. The guy,
he just got hit.
He was laying out this way.
Yeah,
because the ball was thrown very poorly.
Yeah,
he went and just put a shoulder in. He's got to defend the play.
Yeah.
Now I guess he's had previous incidents and accidents, and that's why they did what they did and suspended him. I guess for a couple of games. But look at the film of Chuck Cecil.
Yeah,
and look at what he used to do. Dave Meggett went out of bounds after he got hit by him. He had one more yard to gain, and rather than take a hit from Cecil, he went out of bounds.
It's the hardest hit you
ever
saw.
That's the type of effect.
What's the hardest hit you ever saw?
Doug Plank on Jimmy Giles. I saw in a preseason game our corner, Dave Thomas. We're in San Francisco. It was August of 97. And Jerry Rice was coming across the football field, and Steve Young threw him the football. And Dave Thomas de-cleated Jerry Rice to where he was vertical on the football field in the air like this. I'd love to see if somebody ever got a picture of it. I mean, it's fantastic. It was incomplete, and Rice, you know, hit the ground.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if we won the game. I had a sack in the game. I don't even remember. My birthday was coming up, so I was a happy camper. You know, but that's one of the hardest hits. But anything Doug Plank and Fensick did in the 70s, Chuck Cecil, he hit like a mother. You got to go back to Jack Tatum, but Jack Tatum was an idiot who intentionally tried to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck just tried to hit people hard.
Yeah.
Chuck didn't want to hurt you. You got hurt because Chuck hit you. But Cecil was a bad, and he was 178 pounds, soaking wet.
Yeah.
He had the biggest shoulder pads in the world to kind of prevent injury because he was going to throw it in there. Chuck would throw himself in there.
Those are the ones that always.
Palomalu couldn't hit. Cecil.
No, those are the ones
Lynch
that
couldn't
always,
hit.
Those
not
are the
like
ones
Cecil.
That always throw me off, right? Because to me, everybody thinks about like that defense where like Troy Polamalu, he's laying the boom. He's it.
Yeah.
Ryan Clark was the one that I was worried about on that defense because Ryan Clark came flying in like a missile.
Yeah.
There was a hit, I want to say I don't even remember what year it was, but the next year was the year where everything is, we can't be hitting like this anymore. You can't leave your feet. You can't because Ryan Clark was the guy that was, and it's always the guys that are the thinner, smaller guys.
Not only that, but if receivers can run across the field scot-free and not even thinking about anything ever happening to him, well, sure, he can go climb the ladder and go get a ball that's 10 feet up there if you can't touch him.
Yeah.
Oh, let's wait for him to make the catch. Let's let him come down. There was no – you went in the middle of the football field, you were going to pay a price back in the day.
How do you get back
to – Unprotected. How are you unprotected? You're not unprotected. You know you're going up into the air. Gather yourself.
Yes.
You know, when you're there, you expect to be hit. Catch the ball, and you better turtle and expect to get hit. Nowadays, they can jump up in the air, come down, and hit the ground running, not even care because they know they can't get hit.
And that's what Tom Brady had talked about with it, right? And Lance said the same thing kind of where – guys' technique has fallen off because you don't have to protect yourself anymore.
Right. Yeah.
You're not seeing as good of offense. You're not seeing as good of caliber receiver because, or on the defensive side, you're getting robbed of players taking that next step because they have to take just a half a second to say,
they gotta hesitate.
Let them land.
Yeah.
Let them think about it.
Let me
now
find
I can
out.
Hit them.
Let me get my head out of there. Which shoulder am I going to hit with? I don't want to be too mean to them. Trust me, when a pass comes over the middle, instinctively, you'll see a ref, the pass going over the middle, and there they go.
Yeah.
Wherever the flag is, here or it's right here in their thing. They got a hand on the flag. They can't wait to make a call on roughing the wide receiver.
Yeah.
Or you were too mean to him.
Yeah.
You were mean to him. You looked at him wrong. Let's throw the penalty flag.
The dumbest one to me is still the fact that when the quarterback gets sacked, if I land my body on you.
Yeah.
That's roughing the passer. See, like, that is mind-blowing to me.
So there's a difference. There's a way to hurt a quarterback where you pin his arm and drive his shoulder into the ground. Now, I think that should be a penalty.
100%.
But if you're not securing the body and you're not turning him and driving a shoulder into the ground and you're just – you hit him and
fall like you're a 300-pound man.
95% of the time, these guys are trying to roll off anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that's a little bit ridiculous. I mean, I'm all for protecting the quarterback. But protecting from the quarterback from the original injury.
Yeah.
You know, the intentional injury where a guy drives a shoulder and pins the arm, that to me, that's the penalty.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
It's definitely gone the other way. I will say this. In NFL, I never thought that we would get to where hitting people is a penalty.
Yeah.
It's like, are we still playing football out here, guys? Like,
right. Now, listen, that hip drop tackle, I think, is a dirty play. And I've always thought it was
okay.
A dirty play. That's where a guy comes from behind or on the shoulder high and then slings his legs.
DJ Moore just got the ankle
slings
just got
his legs
rolled
into there. To me, that's a dirty play. That's dirty.
Now, see,
and I've seen that before. We've done. I've seen guys' ankles just get blown to smithereens.
I asked J-Mac about this, Jason McKee. And I asked Lance Briggs about this. And Briggs was like, you got to do whatever you can to make a tackle.
Yeah.
J-Mac kind of echoed that as well. But he was like, there's a better way to do it. We don't teach that. So that's something. So I was like, are people teaching this? Are people putting this out there? Or is this just guys doing it? Because it looks like a technique to me. When I saw it, who was the young man? The quarterback in college got his leg snapped like same week Mark Andrews did, right? And it looks like it's literally just stick your legs out, drop your body weight.
It's a lazy tackle is what it is. It's lazy.
Yeah.
It's a rather than getting to a guy, wrapping him up and driving through his upper body, I know I can get him down if I just throw my legs into his legs. The problem is they're susceptible to injury.
Yeah.
And if you don't give a rat's ass, you're going to end up hurting more than one people. There were guys that hurt multiple people with that crappy tackle.
Yeah.
That should be illegal. That's a garbage play. And that's a choice made by the individual. Do I drive through him and bring him down to the ground, or do I do it the lazy way? And to me, it's a lazy way of tackling. That's what it is.
I feel like it's a lot of times we see it when guys are trying to catch people from behind, too.
Or the side.
Yeah, or the side, right? Like it's almost like a horse collar type. I just got to get in there.
It's either way. A guy's in pursuit of a guy coming down, and it's starting to get away, and then he grabs the shoulder pad and then swings into the leg.
Yeah. I've asked that. I've asked multiple players that because to me, that's something that we're outlawing the tush push because of how dangerous it is. We've literally seen four people.
That's dirty.
Get their legs snapped with this year.
Yeah, that's dirty.
Now, I don't. The only caveat I guess I would ask is this just the hot topic now, or has this been an issue?
No, this has been there for a while.
Because I don't remember a season.
People are just noticing it.
Yeah, I don't remember a season, and maybe it just didn't stand out where there were this many guys getting hurt from it.
Nope, it's happened.
Yeah.
If you go back and you look at all the games, you'll find a number of different instances where a guy's gotten hurt on the same summer style play. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
awful.
It's one of those plays that I don't like. I definitely don't like it. Finishing it off, Yerk, appreciate the show. Love it. Always a great conversation with Yerk. Me and EO playing these shows, and we like Yerk's coming. He's got it. This Sunday, Atlanta Falcons, what do you need to see?
Atlanta's tough.
Good defense. Really good defense.
I think Atlanta's tough. You got yourself a better defense than you had last week. I don't know how successful you'll be running the ball. I hate the side screens. Get rid of them. I don't want to see them ever again.
Lou Getz, he hates a slant, don't he?
I'm tired.
he hates a slant.
Utilize Herbert. Utilize your play-action passing game. Utilize Justin Fields as a weapon. Listen, he can run. That's what you want him to do now.
Yeah.
Okay? Even if it's 10, 12 times a game, I don't care. This is the way it is. You want to win football games, you got to win football games the way you can. I think the defense is going to have to step up and play. They had no turnovers last week. They had two sacks. I thought they played very well. They had a little bit of a lull.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to be 60 minutes. I guess it's impossible to kind of carry that intensity the whole day. The other side does get paid too. So, I'm just looking for them to have a workmanlike effort.
Yeah.
And to win a game. There's a team that's a little bit better than them. They're not phenomenally better than them. It's going to be a team that they're even, and they're going to come in here, and it's going to be a game in Chicago, and the Bears should have a definitive advantage, and the Bears should win by 7-8 points.
Yeah.
That's not even a complicated thing for me. The Green Bay game will be tougher. The Green Bay game will be tougher.
Yeah.
Jordan Love's a better quarterback than Justin Fields, by the way. It's not even close. I want you to know that.
It's tough.
Jordan Love is a better quarterback than Justin Fields. He just is.
It's tough.
One can argue. You can argue all day, and you can sit there and argue with yourself. I made the statement. I just walk out of the room. That's it. Mic drop. Don't need to hear nothing. It's the truth.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's just the way it is. Now, if you want to say he's a more dynamic quarterback, Justin Fields, go ahead. It depends what your definition of dynamic is.
Right.
But he is a quarterback in the true sense of the word, Jordan Love.
He sits in the pocket.
He's a quarterback in the truest sense of the word. He's a quarterback.
He runs if he has
Justin Fields is a new style, new school quarterback.
Yeah.
That has to do it with his legs as much as he's going to do it with his arm. And his legs are much more proficient than his arm is. That's just the way it is. As long as you understand what you have and you build around it and you try to take advantage of what kind of quarterback you have,
right,
then you'll be in pretty good shape. If you try to make him a drop back passer, you're going to be frustrated.
We'll see what they do. All right. It's going to be a long off season.
I'm calling for a victory.
Calling for a victory. Yerk's calling it here. I hope we do get a victory because just makes Packer Week all that more interesting. But hey, for John Yerkovich, Shaboy Pat the Designer, back at it again. Drop a bear down in the comments below. Appreciate you guys tuning in and showing love. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Right now. Peace.